Yesterday, President Trump ended a policy that sent thousands of children away from their parents. It remains to be seen if this will solve this current political crisis regarding immigration. And for some, the debate continues.
If you were caught shoplifting at a local store and you had children with you, while you were going through the process, you would be separated.
That's Congressman Mike Boss speaking to Belleville News Democrat reporter Joe Bustos, who joins us today. We also want to hear from you.
There is some shared blame here on what's going on. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying there's a lot of blame to be shared in this whole process. It's not just the government's fault.
What do you think? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. Plus, 11-year-old bone cancer survivor Gavin Waterman and his family from Mattoon join us in studio to hear his story. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. We'll take your calls after the break. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Yesterday, President Trump issued an executive order that changes his administration's policy of separating children and families and indefinitely will now detain parents and children together at the border. Many are calling this the president's answer to what has been a political firestorm, with Democrats and Republicans calling for a change to his administration's policy. Of course, images and sounds from the border have quickly made their way through the news and social media. You may have heard this heartbreaking recording from ProPublica.
Bueno, aquí tenemos una orquesta.
Those are children, if you heard them there, at a detention facility crying for their parents, mommy and puppy, and a Border Patrol agent saying, well, we have an orchestra here. He was joking. What's missing is a conductor.
Ay, no, papá. Voy a llamar a mi tía para que después de comer me venga a recoger.
Cuando agarre la comida, yo voy a venir para que le...
Ay, no, papá. Tengo el número yo de memoria, 34. Ay, no, papá. Ay, no, papá. Yo también me quiero ir.
¿Y su mami la abuela? ¿Dónde quedó su mami?
En una casa ajena.
That's audio, also audio obtained from ProPublica. In it, you hear a little girl begging to call her family. She's memorized the phone number and she tells it to a consular representative. The woman asks her, where's your mommy? And she says, in someone else's house. So what is certainly a political crisis is also for many a humanitarian one. It remains to be seen how the courts will respond to all of this. But today, we're talking about how Illinois is responding. We're going to hear from Illinois immigration attorney, activists around the state who are planning protests later in the program. But first, we're rounding up the political response from our lawmakers. And we've been asking you for your thoughts. Here's John from Harvard, Illinois.
The crime that these immigrants are being accused of is a misdemeanor, like a traffic ticket. And even the worst traffic ticket, such as a DUI, would only result in the parent being put away for a couple hours, at most a couple days. And in the meantime, their kids would not be sent to a far-off state, the criminal would not be sent to a far-off country, and the kids and the parents would not be separated by thousands of miles without any ability to track each other.
That's a voicemail, John, from McHenry County, left on our hotline. What do you think? You can give us a call now if you want to join our live conversation. Our live number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. Earlier this week, Governor Rauner made his stance clear.
What I am calling on is for us to end the policy of separating families. It is bad policy. It's wrong. It's heartbreaking. It's not the moral thing to do.
That's Governor Rauner. Joining me now to talk about what Illinois' congressional delegation has been saying are Mark Maxwell from WCIA in Springfield and Joe Bustos from the Belleville News Democrat. Both of them have been talking to our Washington delegation. Mark, Joe, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me. Mark, if I can start with you, Governor Rauner had previously said he would support a policy of separating migrant children from their family, not just in name, but by sending National Guard troops to the border. But as we've just heard, it's a little bit different now. Where does he stand on this issue?
Well, I don't know that he ever stated publicly his support for separating families. I do know that he said back in April that he would send Illinois National Guard troops to the border if the president or the federal government gave the order, which is standard procedure. That's been happening in California. There are several other states that have already sent National Guard troops to the border. Illinois is not one of them. But what was interesting was that two of the most popular governors in the country, Republicans in blue states, Charlie Baker and Larry Hogan from Massachusetts and Maryland, respectively, they both said that they would not participate in sending National Guard troops to the border. They basically said, we're going to stand in open protest to the president if he calls on us. In Maryland's case, they rescinded the troops from the border there. So it was interesting, and Governor Rauner is sort of following in that vein by saying he opposes the separation policy, but he still hasn't gone back on or publicly said whether or not he would send troops. He says just this week, I've given no thought to that whatsoever. So he's trying to tiptoe around this issue, but oppose the policy without really putting his own skin in the game, if you will.
Thanks for clarifying that. Joe, when you look at Congress, the president met with House Republicans on Tuesday. House Democrats are also holding news conferences. And Joe, I want to start with you spoke with the Republican representatives from Southern Illinois on Tuesday. And let's hear from Mike Bost when you spoke to him. He represents Illinois' 12th district.
It's not a new policy. Obama actually did it even more, they're discovering now. At no time do we want to separate families. That being said, if a law has been disobeyed, whether it is a law, a misdemeanor or whatever, sometimes, right as the prosecution is going on and the investigation, the separation occurs. If you were caught shoplifting at a local store and you had children with you, while you were going through the process, you would be separated. Now, there's a process now in place, and I think it's coming out very, very clear through our border agents on how this process works. Not for long-time separation, but for sensible separation just to where... understand this. You've done something illegal. If we secure these borders and get things in place, that separation is not going to occur because it won't give the opportunity for that illegal act. So, it is not a new administrative rule. It is one that has been in existence actually since Bush and then enhanced through Obama and now has taken over.
Joe, I just wanted to give you a chance. I know the rest of that audio, you have a longer conversation with him. But first, I wanted to ask about what Congressman Bost is saying about whether or not this is not saying this isn't a new policy or not.
There's previously President Obama there when children came unaccompanied, they were there alone by themselves, so they already were separated. And there has been clarification. There was some discussion about previous cases where they couldn't be children could be held for more than 20 days, and this is what we're coming up against with the separations. Now, President Obama was dealing with just children who came unaccompanied by themselves.
Right. So what you're saying is what Congressman Bost is saying is a little, it's what we're hearing from Congressman Bost is a little bit different than the actuality of whether or not this is a new policy. This is certainly something that's been going back and forth between, particularly from Republicans and from Democrats. Mark, I just wanted to ask you about other Republican response. What are we hearing from Rodney Davis, for example, Congressman Davis?
Well, he made some remarks, I believe, on a recent radio show, and it's interesting, but you asked at the start of this segment whether this was political or humanitarian, and a lot of political creatures, like Congressman Davis, are looking at November, and they're saying, we would love to have a win here. We'd like to be able to solve this immigration problem, this issue that has been a part of presidential debates dating back to the 80s. It's really a decades-old crisis, and Republicans are looking for a fix, and they thought for a moment this week that the conditions were right, that the temperature was turned up and everybody was paying attention. Yes, it was a crisis, but they thought that they could strike while the iron was hot and perhaps get something done on immigration reform. But that really all dissipated and sort of fell off the tracks when President Trump signed this executive order to really pull that back and no longer actively separate parents from their families. So I think Congressman Davis and a few others from their recent public statements, it looks like they're frankly a little disappointed that they've lost momentum, politically speaking. And that's a separate conversation than the humanitarian side. But just in terms of getting something through Congress, they thought they were on track for something. And now that's an open question as to what will happen next.
And to echo that, we do have some audio of Congressman Davis after President Trump signed this executive order yesterday. Let's hear from him.
A number of our immigration laws are unclear or have been interpreted different ways by previous administrations, both Republicans and Democrats. And frankly, we've ignored some of the laws that have been in place. And now I think it's the time to change that and have a comprehensive immigration reform bill.
That's Congressman Darren LaHood. Let's hear from Congressman Rodney Davis. Okay, it looks like, sorry, we don't have that audio, but what he did say was just what you were saying, Mark, about he was saying, I'm afraid I'll be honest with you that executive action may stop us from getting a consensus to be able to put a good policy of not separating families into law. Joe Bustos, I wonder if when we think about, as we're thinking about particularly the Republican delegation, Congressman Davis, who represents a wide swath of central Illinois, Congressman Bost, southern Illinois, how much do you think what they're saying is a reflection of what their constituents believe, Joe, in the case of Congressman Bost?
I think when you look at the overall, there was a CNN poll that said 28% of Americans don't approve of, only 28% approve of the separation policy. But among Republicans, 58% approved of the separation policy. Now, in southern Illinois, it's a very conservative district. So I think Congressman Bost was thinking about that when you're in a tough re-election fight, trying to make sure you keep your Republican base happy. In St. Clair County and Madison County, that's only like 3 to 4% of the population is Hispanic. If you look at some of those color counties where you have a higher Hispanic population there, so I think Congressman Bost has to think about what his Republican base is going to want to see. He's very much in line with the improving border security message. He's been very consistent on that over the last few years.
And Mark, when we think about Congressman Davis, particularly when we're thinking about he's got, as you're talking about November coming up, the politics of this, facing off against Democrat Betsy Dirksen Londrigan, where do you think Representative Davis stands on this issue?
Well, frankly, he said things that point in two different directions just this week. I believe it was Monday when I asked him, should the Department of Homeland Security be separating children from their parents? And his immediate response, he didn't hesitate at all. He said, absolutely not. But then later this week, after that policy was changed, he said, well, hold on a minute. We might have just lost momentum. We might not be able to actually get this done. And so here's kind of what I'm hearing, that Republicans are looking at November, and there's nothing that an incumbent fears more than a lackadaisical and, frankly, happy voter base, right? Because someone's happy with what's going on, they're maybe less likely to come out and vote. They want an issue, the Republican Party as a whole I'm speaking of, they want an issue that they can really hang their hat on in November. They had the tax cuts that passed. Republicans are sort of pleased with that. There's this talk of maybe diplomacy with North Korea, and people's nerves are a little more settled from what we've seen in some of the polling on that issue. But they don't really have an issue that will drive them to the polls. And for President Trump, what we saw in 2016 was that may be the single biggest issue that gets his voter base to come back out and vote for Republicans in November is this issue of immigration. And so it's less than 5 months away, right, the election. So there's still a lot of story left to tell, and we'll see how this evolves. But frankly, there is a very deep interest from congressional Republicans to make immigration a headline issue so they can drive people out to the polls.
That's the politics of it. I want to thank Mark Maxwell. He's WCIA3's Capitol Bureau Chief in Springfield. Joe Bustos is a reporter for the Belleville News Democrat, helping us understand a little bit of the political response to this. Guys, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
We'd love to hear from you on this, if this will affect how you will be voting in November, how you're feeling on this issue of immigration, particularly when it comes to the idea of detention and children and families. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. Let's go now to Fred Sow with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, where he's a senior policy counsel. Hi, Fred. Welcome back to the 21st.
Happy to be here, Nyla. Thank you.
Fred, what's your reaction to the executive order that the president signed yesterday?
Well, basically, this executive order is another failure by this administration. It really does nothing to address the crisis that this administration, by its own choices, by its own policies, created. First off, we still have, more than 2,000 children who are unaccounted for, and there's no assurance under this executive order that they will, in fact, be reunited with their parents. And, unless I'm missing something, family separations will continue under this policy so long as this zero tolerance policy continues, so long as we prosecute every single adult who crosses the border outside of a port of entry, you are still going to separate those adults from their children. It may not happen right away as soon as these families cross the border, but it will happen sometime so long as these parents remain prosecuted. And finally, we have to ask the question about what sense it makes to continue to detain these families. There are so many better alternatives out there. Here in Chicago, there's a wonderful organization, the Interfaith Community for Detained Immigrants, that has been operating houses of hospitalities for asylum seekers. These are community settings, they're trusted environments, and they supervise and try to address the needs of these asylum seekers and make sure that they are going to their court dates.
Fred, let me just stop you there for a second. If we could just pause you for a moment, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Fred Sow from ICIR. Immigration attorney Shannon Shepard's going to be joining us, and you give us a call, tweet to us. Stay tuned. You're listening to the 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the debate over our country's immigration policy, the separation of parents and children at our borders. Yesterday, we're talking about the politics of this, as well as the humanitarian aspect, with lawyers, with activists, and with you. I see some of your calls. We're going to get to them in a minute if you can hold patiently for me. But if the others want to join us, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. We're speaking with Fred Sow from the Illinois Coalition on Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Fred, just to complete your thought that you had at the beginning of before we took a break, you were saying that the policy of just detaining families in itself you find problematic.
Yeah, indeed. Again, there's so many better alternatives out there, community releasing programs, other alternatives to detention that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has in fact tried, and they found these models to be very successful. So why build tent cities? Why lease out disused Walmarts? When we could more cheaply and more humanely and more safely just allow people to be released into the community under the auspices of these programs.
Shannon Shepard is also with us. She's an immigration attorney based in Chicago. She's a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Shannon, now that the president has signed this executive order, to Fred's point about the children who have already been detained legally, what does it mean for those children who are already in, as Fred's describing, these different places, whether it's these Walmarts or these tent cities? Legally, where do those children stand?
Well, they're in a really tough position because In many cases, the separation from their families has been not only, you know, within a few miles, but across states and across, you know, the country. So the practicality of reuniting them with their parents is going to be very difficult. And the administration has even said as much that they don't have a plan in place for that. So these kids are going to be stuck, and they're going to be placed in immigration proceedings, and they won't be given representation. They'll have to secure their own representation, which of course will be next to impossible for them. So it's going to be a nightmare.
Shannon, we've been asking folks on social media what their questions were on this, and we got a question from someone on Reddit earlier asking what the process was for reuniting children with families, and in particular, are there any steps that are taken to prevent kidnappings? How do they verify that claimed parents are the real parents when we're talking about unaccompanied minors or children who are at the border?
Yeah, that's a great question, and there's unfortunately, there's not a great process in place. The children are usually supervised by the Office of Refugee Resettlement and the Health and Human Services Department. But in many cases, the records that were kept when they were detained and separated from their parents are far from complete. And so it's really difficult to match them with their parents, with relatives who may be willing to come pick them up and care for them. And, you know, particularly the reports that we're hearing about the younger, so-called tender age children, you know, they're not going to be able to communicate who their parents are, or who their aunt is. So it's just a mess.
Fred, I wanted to ask you about something. Former First Lady Laura Bush, in an op-ed in The Washington Post earlier this week, compared what's happening with these children now to how we interned Japanese Americans during World War II. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, as someone who is an Asian American and an activist, particularly mm-hmm. also within that community, what your thoughts are on that comparison?
Well, at least with respect to the Americans of Japanese descent, they were able to be together as families. Unfortunately, they were also torn apart from their communities. They had to sell their belongings in many cases, and just totally uproot their lives. But I think of First Lady Bush's comments highlights the way that we have treated minorities in the past. This country, unfortunately, has a sad history of, in particular, tearing apart children from their families, whether it's Native American children who were sent to boarding schools, or going back to the history of slavery and the separation of families that happened under that very unfortunate part of our history. These are the aspects of this policy that unfortunately are not really getting thought about. But it also points out how immigrants are being treated as others under this current administration. That it's okay to use really insulting and unfortunate language to portray people who want nothing better than to seek better lives and to seek safety, and particularly, escaping violence and really, really dangerous circumstances in their home country, and taking the chances to undertake the really perilous journey to come to the United States.
That's Fred So with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. We've been asking you your thoughts on this. We've got a couple voicemails folks left on our hotline. Here's Jim from Champaign's thoughts.
I think there's a little too much emphasis being placed on the United States and the administration and the powers that be and such, because these people that are crossing the border, they do know that they will come here while they're being processed. They'll be separated from their children. There will be trauma involved, and they're willing to do that. They make that decision, and they understand that's what's going to occur. There is some shared blame here on what's going on. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying there's a lot of blame to be shared in this whole process. It's not just the government's fault.
That's Jim from Champaign. Immigration attorney Shannon Shepherd is with us. Shannon, I wonder if you could respond just to Jim's comments a little bit about the clients that you work with. Are they aware when they come what the policy is right now? Or well, what it was, and I guess has some, maybe somewhat changed. There's a question about that, too.
Yes. So, you know, in terms of being aware of the policy, the Trump administration just started this policy a couple months ago. And so certainly the migrants who came in right after they announced the zero tolerance policy were not aware that they were going to be separated from their families. And who would have contemplated that they would have been separated from their babies and their toddlers in particular? Once the news got out, which has really only been in the past few weeks that this story has really broken, you know, then perhaps they were aware. But to what Fred Sal had mentioned earlier, you know, these people are the people that we're talking about are not coming here just for pleasure. They're not coming to visit Disneyland. They're coming because they're fleeing terrible situations, and they've already undertaken a horrific journey through, you know, in some cases, several countries through Mexico to our borders. And I think it does speak to who we are as a United States of America, that, you know, how we treat people who are coming to us seeking our protection and our refuge. And I'd just like to add one more thing, that it is legal for someone to come here and ask for asylum. We have a system in place for that. So a lot of the comments from our representatives about, well, they've created, you know, they've committed criminal acts and they should know that they're going to be separated. I would also disagree with that, because under United States law, we do have a mechanism for people who are seeking refuge, who are seeking asylum, to do so. And that's, you know, what this group has said that they're doing, and instead they're being separated from their children or detained with their children.
That's Shannon Shepherd. She's an immigration attorney based in Chicago. She's also a member of ILA, the American Immigration Lawyers Association. I want to thank her, along with Fred Stowe, with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Both of you, thanks for taking the time to be with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Nyla.
We're also taking your calls on this. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Deborah in Urbana. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the 21st. What are your thoughts on this?
Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I applaud Congressman Davis for speaking out against the separation of families, but it took him a very long time. He was silent and complicit for a long time about this, and so he doesn't get a whole lot of credit. The second thing I wanted to say is that this administration's treatment of immigrants and people of color is such that, I mean, it's so despicable, and the entire Republican Party, as a political party, has been, by and large, complicit, and I urge people to vote up and down the ticket. Do not vote for any Republican.
I was just going to ask Deborah if this is going to affect how you're voting, and you answered
for
me. Absolutely. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for taking the time to call. That's Deborah from Urbana. We wanted to, as we're talking about how Illinois responds to this, we've been talking about the political response, we've been talking to activists, and we wanted to talk to a couple of folks who are planning protests on this issue. And joining me now from our partner station WNIJ in DeKalb is Sarah Dorner. She's one of the organizers of the Rockford Children's March that's going to be taking place on June 30th next weekend. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for being with us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sarah, what motivated you to organize this?
Really, I was listening to the news, and rightfully so, they were reporting the meeting that Trump was having with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, and they were reporting on many other things that were going on. We're living in very tumultuous times, and I started to worry that these children would be forgotten, and I started to worry that this government-sanctioned child abuse would become some sort of new normal. So I pulled over and I contacted several women that I worked with on the Rockford Women's March back in February. and where we had about, 3,000 attendees. And I said, I think we should do something, a march or a rally. And they were very supportive. We scheduled it right then and there.
Their Family Together marches all around the state. They're happening in Springfield, Peoria, Frankfort, Chicago, and the Chicago suburbs of Barrington, Downers Grove, and St. Charles. If you're involved in any of these and want to let us know about it, give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. Sarah, how many people are you anticipating?
So far, we've had, it looks like 1,650 people register for the event via our Move On website.
And now that and I wonder, has the president's executive orders changed your thoughts on this at all?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I've received several messages and emails from attendees insisting that we move forward with the march. We are absolutely moving forward with the march. We had maybe 200 or 300 more people register after he signed the executive order.
Just in the past 24 hours, then, it sounds like, Sarah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have put a call out for you guys if you're organizing other things around the state, as well as we'd like to hear from everyone's thoughts on this issue, whether you support the president's actions or not. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We've got Tina on the line from St. Charles. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the 21st. You're organizing a rally in St. Charles?
I am. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And Tina, what motivated you to get involved with this?
Well, we are part of a coalition called the King County Coalition. It's a collection of six different activist groups that sprung up after the 2016 election. So this isn't necessarily a new thing for us. We've had several rallies and protests in the past, but we immediately felt once this really came to light that it was really important that we get out on the streets and stand up for our values, because we don't think we can stand aside and let children and families be abused without trying to raise our voices for them.
Tina, what's your plan for what you're actually logistically, where are you going to be marching in St. Charles?
We'll be at the corner of Randall Road and Route 64. It's a large intersection in St. Charles, heavily trafficked. We're expecting probably about 300 to 400 people.
And did the president's actions yesterday change your thinking on this at all?
Oh, absolutely not. We really feel that the document that was signed yesterday will likely make certain things worse, because jailing children with their parents, although it's great that they're together, detention centers and camps for children and families does not really demonstrate how we believe we should be treating people who are coming here for safety and help. So we have no thoughts about canceling the march. We think that legally it's likely to not stand anyway, and then there's no plan for how to move forward at that point. Oh, and additionally, we think reuniting the children who've already been separated should be priority number one. The pictures and the sounds of the suffering children really have sparked such a movement, and we need to solve that problem. And we believe we have the resources to do so if we put our minds to it.
That's Tina in St. Charles. Tina, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, what are the logistics for what you all are planning in Rockford?
We'll be gathering at 10 a.m. on June 30th in the City Hall parking lot. That's 425 East State Street, where Rockford Mayor Tom McNamara will address the crowd. We have several different religious leaders who will be saying prayers with us, and then we will march to the federal building, where we have several speakers who will also talk to the crowd, and also singers and artists from the Latino community in Rockford performing.
Sarah, what do you want to see happen?
Well, we're not just marching for the children to be reunited with their families, because I agree with Tina, that's absolutely critical, and there is no plan in place for that right now. But we're also marching to restore asylum for purposes of domestic abuse and gang violence, and, of course, to end the detention of families.
That's Sarah Dorner, one of the organizers of the Rockford Children's March that's happening next weekend, June 30th. We've got a call. Let's end this conversation with Ted on the line from Petersburg. Hey, Ted, we're almost out of time, but what's your comment?
My point, I've heard that border guards are also blocking the path of these immigrants to cross legally. So what else do they have? What other alternative do they have but to cross illegally? And that's when the situation gets really bad. But they're also taking kids from parents who are crossing at legal border crossings.
Right. So what alternative do folks have to your point? Ted, thanks for your comments. I want to thank all of you, those who called, tweeted, and those who had questions on Reddit. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we're going to be hearing the story of an 11-year-old cancer survivor. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. With June being National Cancer Survivor Month, we wanted to end today's program with the story of 11-year-old Gavin Waterman. 5 years ago, Gavin was just six when he was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, a form of bone cancer. It's so rare that for both children and adults, just about 100 people are diagnosed each year in the U.S. Gavin's now been cancer-free for 5 years, and he's here in our studio along with his parents, Nikki and Jacob Waterman. They made the trip from Mattoon, Illinois, to share their story as well as that of their dogs. That's an important part of this. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to The 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Gavin, and I wanted to say to you, particularly congratulations on being 5 years of being cancer-free. I'm really looking forward to the day that I can say that I have 5 years of being cancer-free. How does it feel?
Good.
Yeah, it feels good. Nikki, can I ask you a little bit about the story, how you first of all found out he was just six when he was diagnosed, and it was a pretty fast process of you figuring out what happened. Can you share a little bit of that story?
Yeah, it was back in April of 2013, and we had been to the doctor for some leg pain, and they did an x-ray and found that there was something there, so we had to go back. That was a Friday. We had to go back on Monday, and they did a CT scan and found out that there was a tumor there, and by Wednesday, we were in Chicago meeting with specialists, and by the end of April, he was starting with his first rounds of chemo.
Wow. Jacob, that must have, you have other kids as well. I can't imagine how hard this was all for your family.
Yeah, it was pretty much, we had to, you know, drop everything, you know, take time off of work and plan trips and go to Chicago that, you know, I've never had to drive in Chicago before. And all of a sudden, you know, we're getting sent to downtown Chicago to see doctors.
And you, when you were, you stayed during your treatment, Gavin, did you all stay at the Ronald McDonald House in Chicagoland in Northwest Indiana, Gavin?
Yes.
What was that like? Do you remember?
It was kind of like my home away from home. It had like a gaming room and lots of stuffed animals in one room and overall welcoming.
That's good, because everything else was probably pretty awful at that point, I would imagine. Yeah, chemotherapy's pretty terrible. And I imagine for you guys, how tough is it as parents to watch your son go through this?
It was so hard. There were so many tears from everyone, you know, watching him go through things that we knew needed to happen. But, you know, it was painful at times for him and scary at times for him. And then leaving our other two children, thankfully, my grandparents just lived down the road from us. So their lives went on pretty much as normal, other than the fact that we weren't there. I mean, they got them to school and activities and things like that. So that was a huge, huge help.
And so were you all able to, you stayed at Ronald McDonald House as well with
Yes.
Gavin? And Gavin, when you were six, you also met a golden retriever named Sam. Was that at the Ronald McDonald House?
Yes.
Can you tell us about what it was like when you first met him?
He was really loving and really loved kids, and his owner was very nice too. And
so would Sam kind of hang out with you while you were going through your treatments?
Yeah.
He would come for visits at the Ronald McDonald House. Just about every time we would come to town, his owner would bring him to see us, even if it wasn't their time to visit. And they've become like part of our family. Linda and Ted.
And Jacob, how does that work? With do people bring their dogs? They're like therapy dogs?
Yeah, they have a troop, and there's a different type of breeds that they bring in. Sometimes, I think it was on Tuesday nights, they would bring in three different types of dogs. And then on Tuesdays, and then also when we stayed at the hospital, whenever he'd have treatments at the hospital, they had some therapy dogs that would come to the children's floor too. So.
Yeah, so you really got a chance to get to know him. I guess he was a really good friend to the whole family. Yeah. Oh, Gavin, I'm sorry, because now I know where we're talking about Sam. He was a really important part of your family, but you're talking about him in the past tense. Can you explain a little bit of that, Nikki?
So cancer brought us together at the Ronald McDonald House, but Sam actually passed of cancer back in 2016.
Mm. And so he was with you at the time when Sam passed from cancer. You also, at that point, Jacob, you had another therapy dog that entered your life too, as well.
Yes,
right?
Through Linda and Ted, they had got us met a breeder, and they had helped us get a dog of our own that we could train and classes, and eventually, once he gets his final certificate, he'll be an official therapy dog. We can take him and
he's been through all of his training. We just need to do the testing and get him passed so he can start working.
Gavin, what's it like to have a dog with you? Is it just fun because they're just so sweet and they're there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And is it just because what do you remember most about Sam and enjoying the time you had with him?
One of his tricks, they called it drive-through. They put a treat on both of his paws, and he'd wait for about a minute, and then you'd say drive-through, and he'd take the treat.
And how important was Sam? Do you feel like Sam was sort of your buddy as you were going through everything?
Yeah.
And do you want Comet to help other kids now?
Yes.
Why do you want him to do that?
Because dogs kind of helped me get through it, so I want it to be the same for other kids.
Jacob, what do you have to do to be a therapy dog? What kind of training do you guys have to do with
Comet? Comet went through five different classes. We started when he was a puppy, and then there was like a...
He went through puppy classes, a couple of classes to get a Canine Good Citizen Award, certificate, whatever you want to call it, and then he went through the training that that will get him ready for his therapy training course to pass.
And why is it important for you guys to have Comet now be a part of all of this?
Because it was such an important part of Gavin's life, and his willingness to go on sometimes was that Wednesday at the hospital or those Tuesday evenings at the Ronald House. And it just made such a big impact on our life, and we want to help others.
And what else do you think was so important for you guys as you were thinking about going through this? It's 5 years now. So I imagine there's probably a part of you that can't even believe you went through all of this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our faith was a big one of the things that got us through everything, and prayers from other people, definitely. And then the help of others. I mean, there were people who, you know, did fundraisers for us, and so that, you know, Jake and I both could be with Gavin, you know, at his side and not have to worry about work and, you know, those things, bills and all of that. And so I would say to others, you know, let people help you, because, you know, we could have done it on our own, but it's so exhausting mentally and physically, and having the help of others and knowing that others are there for you is just so comforting.
And Jake, as you think about that, I wonder what other advice you have for families that might be going through some tough things right now with their kids.
I would say keep the faith. Keep praying every day. I give it all to God. That's what we did to get through it. Yeah.
And Gavin, now you're back in Mattoon, and I figure out your school's out for the summer, right?
Yeah.
So what are you doing this summer?
Playing the PlayStation and laying with Comet most of the time.
And how great is it for you guys that that's what this summer is about for Gavin?
It's awesome. We mm-hmm. love that he's home and healthy, and we're just thankful.
Mm-hmm. And when you guys think about the training that you're doing, will Comet be working in Mattoon, or are you thinking he's going to travel to other places?
Hopefully both. Hopefully both. We haven't got it all worked out and figured out just yet, but we hope to be able to share him with as many people as possible.
And also, it sounds like not just share him, but share your family's relationship with him. You mentioned Linda. How important was, so Sam's owner originally, how important was that relationship for you guys, Jake?
Oh, it was wonderful. Linda and Ted, they, you know, when even, they would come see us, especially just bring over the dog to the Ronald House, you know, even anytime we were in town. You know, we've gotten together and had visits like at their house for dinner, and any, you know, anytime we come up and that we'd see them, just special. So anytime. So yeah, it was just a good relationship between us. So.
Yeah. And I feel like once you've had cancer, everyone kind of, you end up, I think people, you automatically know a little bit about what people are going through
yeah.
and have some sympathy for that. Nikki, as you think about that, do you think it will be tough for you to see other families going through this, or is it something where you also feel like you have the experience so you want to help?
Well, it's always heart-wrenching. I hate hearing about it and seeing it, but I believe that we went through it for a purpose, and that purpose is to help others.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. As we think about this month and being National Cancer Survivors Month, I wonder if there's anything else you wanted to add for folks as they're listening to this story, Jake?
No, I can't think of anything.
Well, thank you so much for being with me. I want to thank Gavin for coming down, Gavin Waterman and his mom, Nikki, and dad, Jake, and his brother, who's also here back in the control room. You guys, thanks so much for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
For having us.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be speaking to Illinois author Rebecca McKay about her new, book that takes place during the AIDS outbreak in Chicago in the 1980s. It's a fictional account of what went on, but it's based on years of research she did talking to folks about that time. And despite it being a time of tragedy, she also says that for her, there was a lot of joy.
I think there's a lot of life and joy in my characters, and I think there was a lot of life and joy in this community at this time. And as I sat down and talked with people, so often we'd end up laughing together about individual stories, about their friends, or just hearing about Unit 371 at Illinois Masonic, which seemed like, against all odds, an incredibly joyful place. They had Broadway posters on all the walls. They had restaurants donating food every night. They had, you know, a fish tank in the lounge. They had an art room. And obviously people are in pain there. There's a tremendous amount of suffering, but there's, you know, also hope, and there's also compassion and community. And honestly, entertaining stories, fun things that happened that I'm being told about.
That's a Chicago author, Rebecca McKay. Her new book, The Great Believers, is just out. I'm sitting down with her, having a conversation with her about that book. We're also going to be hearing about Starved Rock and some fun summer travel tips. Just a reminder, Starved Rock has been really busy. We're going to be hearing a conversation with the park about how they've been handling all of that traffic to the park, and give you some advice if you are planning to hike there for the summer. So that's coming up on tomorrow's 21st. By the way, if you have the NPR One app, you can always download that from wherever you get your smartphone, and you can find past shows there. It's pretty simple to download if you just set your home station. You can also search for the 21st to follow us, and you can easily find past shows that way. We're also available on iTunes and Android. You can always follow us on Twitter. Our handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. When we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. You can also interact with us on Facebook. Search for our page. It's the 21st. And if you like that, you can also comment on what we're working on. You can post questions or comments that you'd like us to ask on air. Thanks to all the folks who contributed today's conversation. They did that by going to our website. It's 21stShow.org. And if you head over to the right-hand side of the page, it shows you how to leave us a voicemail, if you want to send us an email, or follow us on social media. All you have to remember is our website, 21stShow.org. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Our intern is Tyler Panlilio. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. See you back here tomorrow. Have a good day.